Good day, everyone. Welcome back to the Powerhouse Perspective, where we empower leaders for business breakthroughs. I'm Scott Medeiros, the president of HelmWise, and this is Chandler Rose, the CEO of the Rosewood Family of Companies. Thank you for rejoining us on our podcast series. Those who may have listened to our last podcast, we talked quite a few things about the crew and how a captain selects the crew. Today, we want to talk more about what do we do when we have the right people in the right seats or on the right ship at this particular point in this particular podcast. So last time, we talked about working genius. We talked about seasonality. We talked about the accountability chart, people analyzer, GWC, which are all tools that are used as part of the EOS model out of Traction from Gino Wickman. But really, that piece about connection is really important when you're trying to guide your crew. And I think you and I both like that saying, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. So I thought we'd have a little discussion about kind of developing our crew rather than just selecting our crew.
Yeah, I think we can do a flashback, Scott. To, you brought it up, but when you were early on, first came to Rosewood, running ProVantage Corporate Solutions, one of our companies, and you know, I think I came into your office and just, I have an opinion of what is most important.
Yes.
For our teams here in the office, for the project managers, field managers, that company does setups and remodels inside of retail stores. So we have crews dispersed across the United States, running in separate groups, a lot of times overnight, sometimes running three shifts a day. You know, so maybe we'll do a quick flashback of my really coming into you. You're very much a growth, operations, risk mitigation.
Right.
Your operator and kind of maybe you can recount that.
Well, actually, I appreciate the opportunity to recount that story because it was really impactful to me. And up until the time that we had that conversation, I'm a mission-driven person. We've talked about my military background, and I'm used to working with people who are very mission-oriented and very reliable. They're obviously highly selected. They all are college graduates, and they've been in business for quite a period of time, and you really begin to depend upon those people. And so the fact that you needed to connect or motivate them wasn't as important as I found out it was when I came to the ProVantage Corporate Solutions. And our conversation was one was, you know, I couldn't connect with that blue-collar worker. I've been working in corporate enterprise and in white-collar work for such a long period of time. I had a hard time connecting with that individual. But it was so important to understand and connect with them, to understand what they're going through, what motivates them, which is completely different than what motivates me. And I remember coming into you saying how challenged I was about, you know, I really wasn't connecting, or more importantly, I really wasn't respecting the person in the field, and therefore wasn't able to establish a connection. And you brought up the point that that's what it's all about. It is about that connection. It is about caring for that person in the field that's going to make the difference going forward. And it was something that I hadn't dealt with before, and you really humbled me by reminding me of the fact that, yeah, it's not about me. It's really about the people.
Yeah, we forget the importance of love, and it's a topic we cover at our HelmWise cohorts, and it's one that a lot of folks, what in the world are you talking about love? And certainly there's the different types of love most people have heard of. But in the business context, you know, caring is probably a better word or more easily interpreted word of, do you actually care about the people that are out there in the field, the people that are new hires that are doing the work? And I think that care will motivate, even if you put the best. And I think what you found was, even if you have great, you know, SOPs,
yeah, you have perfect SLAs, process.
Yeah, your process absolutely. Is great. If they still do not want to do it, one, you probably have a culture issue internally,
correct.
But you
correct.
May also have an issue of, do they see and do they feel caring for the folks that are actually executing
right.
the work? And so, it is part of, you know, our ethos, the way we started. It certainly comes from having a blue-collar background myself and working around a lot of those folks. And, you know, there's some things there on folks that don't even have an actual trade, that are trying to better their life, that have made some mistakes or had a bad hand in life. How do you motivate them? And so we talk about caring. Another area we talk about when we look at values as we're moving into how you develop their character and the values is we develop what we call the spark, if you remember.
Yes.
And so everybody says, you got to find the diamond in the rough. You got to, that is such a cliche pipe dream that you're all of a sudden going to find an employee that meets all of our five values in this case. And they're there always, and they're bought in, and they understand. That presumes they even understand, one, what the values mean. And they have you know, deconstructed them down to a level that they're potentially at in the organization. They understand how it builds up to the overall. Two, it's just a, it's such a, I would almost call it a fantasy. It's the same people who tell you, they'll give you that advice, and, you know, it's great books on it, a lot of info. All you need to do is hire the right people. You know,
sounds
I easy. Played sports, and every coach and manager in the history of professional sports could say that. All we had to do was sign the right people, draft the right people, everyone do their job, and run all the plays we tell them, and we'd win. Well, you know, congratulations.
Right.
That doesn't help much. So when we talk about the spark, is we try to find glimpses of when they are exhibiting behaviors that align with and build on our values. And we try to get them and remind management and leaders and coworkers, that's the thing that you need to randomly recognize. You need to fan that spark. If you think of starting a, obviously you did survival training in the Marines and taught quite a bit, but when you're getting that spark into some, you know, some, getting a flame going, you get the spark, and then you,
yeah, get those little embers.
You got to get the embers, and you got to really take care of those embers and blow on them and get them going and try to get them into a flame. I think that's a much better metaphor for what you're looking at when you try to get employees on the bus. Yes, you want to vet them. You do all the best practices that are out there. There's a lot of them out there, but the reality is we've hired people with great interview skills that sounded like they were amazing, and the values were exhibited wonderfully in several hours of discussion, and that didn't work out. And we've had people that surprise you out of left field, and I just don't see a real high correlation on that. So.
Yeah, it reminds me of another humbling conversation you and I have had over the many years, and it had to come, or it had to do with the values. And again, I was frustrated with that blue collar worker in the field, and you know, I say, well, we've got these values, and if they're not meeting those values, they should be our selection criteria. And if they don't meet all five values, then they don't deserve to be part of the Rosewood family of companies. And you instructed me very well about, well, it's not about having all of the values, right? None of us are going to be perfect when it comes to the values. There are going to be good days and bad days, and hopefully most of the days we exhibit all five values. But you know, there are going to be times, in fact, one of our values is grace through generosity, because there are going to be times when you stumble. And what you said to me was so important, right? It goes back to the spark. Have you found that person who has two, three of those values and has the ability potentially to grow in the fourth and the fifth value? Because that's the person where you can fan the embers and get them to be a fully up person who lives all five values in our particular scenario. But I was always looking for perfection. I was like, they don't make the criteria. Again, going back to aviation, right? You got to have certain
process,
standard
man.
Selection process. It's very objective, hopefully. And if you, you know, either you make it, you don't. It's a one or a zero. No, that's not the way it is with people. And we always said that business and would be easy if you didn't have customers and employees, because as soon as you add a person to the equation, it becomes very difficult. So those are two humbling things, even after decades in business, that I learned just being part of the Rosewood family of companies, is this caring and the fact that, wait a minute, is it a spark? Are you able to fan that ember and grow it into a roaring fire? So despite all the certifications and all the degrees and all the big, you know, Fortune 50 companies I've worked for, it was a very common sense approach that you gave to me in those two instances that really made a difference in my outlook.
Yeah, and it leads a couple of different ways. When you find the person who has the spark or exhibits portions of the values that we're excited about and doesn't quite fit the right seat on the bus, what is your obligation? How do you deal with that? And so we can start with that and kind of move to some other areas, I think. But let's say we have an employee. We know they love the culture. They add to the culture. They exhibit many areas of the values. Maybe they can't do spirit of excellence because we just have them in an area that's not their aptitude or their disposition or their working genius. We go back to that we spoke of last episode. But what do you do with that person? And there's no right answer, so I'll let you off the hook on that, because that seems to be a moving target of what you do with that individual. So.
Well, actually, it goes to some of the challenges I actually had after that conversation is, okay, taking an objective assessment of, you know, where is this person? Do they have two, three of the values? Do they have most 80%, 50% of the qualities and talents to do the role in which we currently have them in. And getting to know that person, it's truly an individual by individual thing. Because you could take two people who have the very same characteristics as far as, hey, they meet three of the values and they've got 50% of the capabilities, but what is their attitude, right? There was a great book called The Way of the Shepherd, written by a gentleman called Dr. Kevin Lehman. And in it, he talks about what he calls knowing the shape of your sheep. Obviously, it's about a shepherd, so the shape of your sheep. And it had to do with, you know, do you understand their heart? Do you understand their attitude? Do you understand their personality? Do you understand, you know, how they show up emotionally, right? And all those things together are what's going to determine whether or not that person is someone that you can mold and coach into a very capable employee, or whether or not, no matter how much effort you're going to put into it, it's just going to be kind of pushing that rock uphill like Sisyphus, right? And so to me, it's an individual by individual thing. But I can honestly say that unless you take the time to get to know the individual, to figure out whether or not they are someone you can fan the flame for, or whether it's someone who perhaps no matter how much oxygen you put into it is probably going to go out, is an individual by individual thing. At least that has been my experience so far.
I think that's accurate. You know, that book is a great book for anyone that hasn't read it. It was recommended to us by another gentleman that we know. Going out and surveying your flock often is probably, yeah, to be very blunt, transparent about Scott and I, probably our biggest weakness is really always willing to help. Scott is an enabler, certainly loves to get alongside and help you succeed. You must come to Scott. And I fall into that same category of, I'll spend as much time as you like. We can talk through things we discuss on this podcast, can help you, you know, potentially with your business or other personal issues. But I do not exhibit a very good character trait of wanting to go out and tend to the flock itself. And so I think that's a challenge for a lot of people that are type A, entrepreneurial driven. You know, you have the folks that do it really well, and you see them, they do a great podcast, and they're culture builders, and they're driven, and they pour into their people. And then you have the people that are driven by running the business, growing the business, launching the product, providing the service. You know, you've got to understand and mitigate your weaknesses. You need to find other people on your team. There's other ways to do it. But in reality, I see a pretty good divide there. And what do you see in that?
Well, a couple of things. And, you know, as you're speaking, and I was thinking back to a statement by John Maxwell, and he has this statement, walk slowly through the crowd. So when you go to a International Maxwell conference and John shows up, he spends time just taking his time getting to know people and taking selfies with people and those sort of things. And it's his way of slowing down and getting to know his sheep. And, you know, as I thought back going, you know, have I exhibited that in the past? There was one time that quickly came to mind, which was in the early 2000s. I was honored to lead a team for a company called Cable and Wireless. And what I enjoyed so much about that job is every day we got together as a team. There was about 15 to 17 of us. I was a bit of the older guy. This was some, you know, 20 somethings who were most of the people who were in the team. But we made it a point that we got together at least twice a day. It was in the morning, we got together for coffee, and in the afternoon, we got together for coffee. And middle of the week, we had the midweek chill where we came in and made ice cream sundaes. And I remember that time, it was so enjoyable to go to work. I was looking forward to it. I was motivated by it. And it wasn't the work. It was the people. It was the fact that we knew one another. We would talk about such things as a Super Bowl that was coming up or things that we were going to do on the weekend. It was spending time to learn each individual. And as I got more and more senior in organizations, there was less and less of that, right? You start to become isolated, and you probably felt it as a CEO, especially of a small business. You tend to get isolated. You don't have all the connection to the people down below. And I'm trying to think now about how much more effective a company would be or team would be if they walked slowly through the crowd once a day, a couple of times a week, got out of the office, had that conversation with that accountant or with that bookkeeper, with that procurement person. Just let them know that, hey, I see you and I care about you, and how much that would motivate them that, wow, the CEO of the company, the you know, COO of the company actually knows me, right? Or at least feels and taking time out of their day to know them. So that's been my experience. And like I said, it wasn't until you mentioned that it reminded me of that time back in 2000 through 2003 that I went, wow, I really enjoyed going to work. And it wasn't the work, right? I would have thought that instinctively, but when you mentioned that, it was actually the people that made the work so important.
Yeah, I think there's you have to acknowledge that there is a scale and whether your workforce is accessible. Are they all within the office?
Right.
That's great advice for the office. But if you work a remote team or you happen to be in a situation where, you know, you're not in the headquarters, how do you still take the time and effort to do that? And I think realistically, when it gets bigger, it gets much harder. John Maxwell is obviously doing a great job of it at a multi-thousand person event, but in actuality, certainly he's modeling the way and he's out doing
sure.
it. But
sure.
You know, he's able to pull a couple thousand people in one building. Most businesses do that.
That's true. Actually, we have more options today than we did back in 2000, obviously, because you've got video conferencing, you've got Zoom and those sort of things. But this is something, whether you realize it or not, you do very, very well. It's quite often that you'll go on the road for quite a few days. And then out of the blue, you'll just call me and just say, hey, I'm just checking in. Right? It isn't that you've got an issue that you've dealt with or found on the field, or just some big task you need to take up. You just say, hey, I'm just checking in. And I think we can do that as leaders, right? If you have a remote team or you have a team that is dispersed, you can put it on your calendar, right? I don't know. You know, Tuesday, I'm going to call Bobby. Thursday, I'm going to call Sally. And you go through that. And it's just a five-minute conversation. Just how you doing? Have any issues I can help you with? How's the family? You know, how are you feeling? And just have that personal connection. Another book, I keep on bringing up books on this podcast, but The Relationship Economy by John DeJulius. He talks about Ford. Every time you connect with a person or you have an interaction with a person, find out something about their family, the F, or their occupation, their job, the O. R is recreation, right? What they do to enjoy. And then the D, their dreams, right? What are they passionate about? What are they looking to do in the future? So F-O-R-D, Ford, is something that whenever you have a conversation, it could be in that five-minute catch-up or how are you doing? Hey, how's the family? Hey, how are you going to go out on your motorcycle this weekend? Or hey, you know, how's that working on that degree you're working on or that certification? That establishes connection. Doesn't take a whole lot of time, but then it helps you know your sheep.
Very good.
Or in this case, your crew. I got to stop saying sheep. It probably has a negative connotation. But
way of the shepherd. We got
way of the shepherd. Exactly right. Exactly right.
Back to the other direction it goes, though, is a debate you and I've had very often is, you know, when you take it to scale and to mass, or you're really hitting deadlines, you have scopes of work that must be delivered to the client that we have obligated to deliver with excellence. Mm-hmm. You know, it comes back to we have grace through generosity, but we have spirit of excellence. We have standards that must be met.
Yeah.
And then you know that your sheep is having a rough time at home. We've got them in a seat. We know maybe not their most optimal position. Mm-hmm. Balancing justice and mercy, truth plus charity, we call it when we define love at the office. So too much truth we've covered on here is a jerk.
Yeah.
You know, too much charity, and you're really setting people up for disaster because you're enabling. And they get that's the situation where certainly I think you've not been a caring leader when someone gets let go and they don't already know why they're getting let go.
So
it's been a major breakdown. You know, prior to that, so no right answer. So I'll keep throwing you the hard ones.
A couple things come to mind, and I love this conversation this way because it's so free form. It's first another book came to mind, Radical Candor by Kim Scott. And what Kim Scott says in her book Radical Candor, she says you can challenge directly, right? You can hold that person accountable. You can have that difficult conversation once you have shown that you care deeply. Goes back to that caring piece. Once that person knows you, they know that, hey, you're a bit upset right now because something didn't go the way that was supposed to, or that person didn't deliver to the expectation to the client, but they also know that you care about them and they can take that constructive criticism, hopefully, in a very good way and not know that I'm not being attacked. The person isn't going to, you know, give me a pink slip at the end of the day, but it comes from the caring first. Then I'm also reminded of another book by Jocko Willink called The dichotomy of leadership. And in there, he calls the ultimate dichotomy is that you train, you care, you develop your people. So you spend a lot of time, effort, and energy, but at the same time, you must lead them into a situation where they could lose their lives. And so you care so much about them, but you also have to have that leadership aspect where it may not work out. So in that case, even though you may really have spent the time to learn one of your crew members and you have really invested in them, and maybe you have a great connection from a personality standpoint, you really like a person, but if you've given that feedback and they haven't improved, it may be time that they need to be put back on the dock. And you've got to be willing to have that conversation as well, because that is truly caring, right? If you want to put them in a place where they're going to be successful, because obviously if they know that they may be disappointing you, that's going to be stressful to them. And so do you want that person living with that sort of anxiety coming to work, or you want to put them in the place where they're going to be successful? And so I think that, you know, the caring again then comes into the critique and done in a very effective way so that they can grow and be a more capable member of the crew.
I think that if you look at the, you know, sort of a scatter plot when they put the spider web on it, and it drives me to a different situation, which is how much they have politicized and ruined good diversity. But my experience is if you're very high in one of the traits, something inevitably is going to be weak.
Yeah.
And so if you truly have
not balanced, you're kidding me.
It's not. If you get someone who's really good in numbers, the majority of the time, overwhelming majority of the time, their interpersonal skills and EQ are probably getting pulled a little bit into the lacking category. And so I do think that's another area where we may misjudge the fact that they're not, quote unquote, living up to the values, when in reality they excel in a certain area, which creates a weakness in an area where maybe they're not as, you know, capable. I rarely see, you know, I mean, again, sports is easy. Utility players that make it a long time do occur, but they're pretty rare. And you think about most of the time, you get a excellent positional player, and they're probably stuck in that position. They're kind of pigeonholed.
Right.
If you pigeonhole people, you kind of need both. And so, but certainly when you're trying to have that discussion on how they're fulfilling the obligations of their role, if they're a 10 out of 10 on one, more than likely, in my experience, they're going to be a 5 out of 10 somewhere else. Whose job is that to fix? I mean, certainly you want them to mitigate it, but whose job is that? To me, it's the leader's job.
Is the leader's job. And it also brought to mind, it goes back, we talked a little bit about seasonality on the last podcast, but it's something we spoke about not too long ago. It's probably about 25 minutes ago, right? Is as a leader, you must have the ability to also see things from a much broader perspective. John Maxwell would say, you know, leaders see before and they know before. That's part of what leadership and leaders do. But in this case, you take that person who in this period of time, right now, may not be adding the most value as you need, right? But in a different season, in a different time, 6 months from now, their true skills may come to bear that actually win you a deal, deliver to a difficult client. And so as a leader, you're not always looking for the perfect solution right now, because the variables are always constantly changing. So do you have the ability to take perspective of your team and collectively understand what you need and when you may need it? Because if you have that person, if you're very operations driven like myself, and you're all focused on all getting things done, but no one's out there winning revenue, you've got a problem. So you may have a person who isn't as good as the ones and zeros, but is a phenomenal relationship person. And right now, maybe it's all focused about delivering to that new client that we just won. But if you don't pay attention to that rainmaker, right? When you need a new deal, you don't have that person on board. So as a leader, you've got to be able to see that broader perspective to say, okay, how does this fit into the bigger picture, the bigger puzzle of the organization? Because I have been guilty saying, hey, look, I need a person who can do X right now. You can't do it right now, so I'm kind of going to push you to the side. Not the way to act as a leader. You got to say, look, you're not in the right, we're not in the right time for your skill set, but your skill sets are still important. Going back to connection and caring, and there will be a time when we need you.
So, I mean, again, we'll go back to an area where I am weak, just going out and soliciting that engagement with the employee to really to check on your flock. If that person exhibits the values and they're in a time frame where they are not optimally suited, they are probably beating themselves up. And so what is your role? You're actually pouring time into someone who's probably not going to be your best performer in order to make sure they understand, I still need you. You will be important in the fourth quarter, not the first quarter.
Right.
And, you know, that takes some vision, I think, and some maturity out of the leader to say, wait a minute. Yes, they're not great right now. I mean, you see it occasionally. You see, I know kickers are probably a good one. A lot of football fans can't stand. But you'll see a, you know, a bad, unimportant kick or, you know, drop ball, and you'll see the coach go over, the smart coach go over. Not a big deal at that point in the game, but make sure they really praise them. Hey, you're really good, because they know come fourth quarter, that may be a game-changing opportunity. If you don't build them up and keep their self-esteem going, you know, they're beating themselves up. How well are they going to perform in front of a client when you spent the last 3 months telling them they're not that good at their job because they can't operate on the X's and O's of day-to-day execution of work? And I think that's a tough, you know, reality. The other kind of perverse part of that is the better they are at rainmaking, they bring in a bunch of business. You're at capacity. You have to suck in people that aren't necessarily your best performers at execution.
Yeah.
You know, their success can put them in a spot where they're having to be executors, and you end up pulling them in because scaling is a lot more difficult than most people give it credit. As you know, it's a good, much better problem than shrinking, but it certainly is a problem to scale and keep culture and train up. And this is an area where you certainly, you know, excel better than I am, building those scopes of works, training, have people plug into the seat. Certainly the military helped with that, because you never know when people are coming back to fill the seat. So they may go out on a mission and not come back at all. And so,
well, there's a lot there. What came to mind as you were describing that situation is the need and the importance of communication, right? You mentioned the coach who goes and has a quiet word with that kicker, right? To make sure they still feel they're part of the team. Hey, I'm not going to need, that's okay. We're going to need you, you know, when it's down to the final seconds and you got to put it through from 50 yards out, right? That sort of thing. As leaders, I was sitting here thinking, how often do I look at my calendar and I've got a whole series of meetings on there and it's all operations driven or we've got this going on, but how often am I actually putting deliberate time to touch base with some of the people who I'm going to need now in the future?
Not often if you're me.
Yeah, and it's
the personality.
I would say a lot of leaders are that way because it's the nature of it. You get busy, right? Yeah. But again, as leaders, we are responsible for the crew. And so if we're not doing it, are we just assuming it's getting done by our lower level leaders, our managers? Well, then if that's the case, how much time are we spending with those managers, right? We've got to ensure that we're having that consistency of communication. And if I remember correctly, back in the Way of the Shepherd, he talked about, you know, making sure the sheep can depend on or know the shepherd, right? So they are comfortable. They know how that shepherd is going to act. They know his cadence, his or her cadence, right? And how they, you know, manage the flock, et cetera. Well, we as leaders have to be the same sort of way. They got to know that, look, we're going to have periods of time where we're going to be focused on the operations, but there's going to be periods of time where we're going to focus on them as well. But how often do we try to communicate that cadence, that frequency? And it's not an easy thing. It's more art than science. I'd love to go out and create a spreadsheet or a formula that says, hey, it's, you know, Tuesday, the 5th of whatever month, and hey, I'm supposed to be doing this today. It doesn't happen. Things move. But I think if we zoom out as leaders and still try to take that 20,000 foot view, we can say, ooh, you know, I'm not spending enough time getting to know my people or reinforcing the fact that they're important to the organization. So I need to spend more time on that. We tend to do it more in a, you know, kind of a scattergun approach instead of a real deliberate sort of way.
Very good. when you have that conversation, you know, you brought up earlier, certainly in many of the other podcasts, we've talked about purpose, but I know when I've had it in the field face-to-face, you know, in the office face-to-face, the reason we keep bringing up purpose again, even in a situation where you're face-to-face, certainly if you know your employees well and you know their what they hold important and what they value, you know, it should not look like you and I facing each other directly and you know, for example's sake, you should be setting out in front of the two of us and going, hey, Scott, here's the purpose we agreed to. And these are the standards you said were important to you. And so the physical and really the metaphor in your brain, the picture in your brain should be, we should not be here. Yes, we're talking to each other, and but we should be saying, Scott, you know, tell me about it, because, you know, you told me this was important to you and your family. This is what you want to stand for as a person, as a father, as a husband, as a leader, as a, you know, a business executive. And you said, not only was this your goal, you said, these are the standards which you're going to hold yourself accountable to. Then we're having a discussion on how you and I have missed the mark meeting these standards. And it's a lot less, it's not confrontational, but it's less confrontational, because then if we're agreeing this is the right purpose, and you say, well, Chandler, you didn't make the phone calls. Yeah. You don't understand the situation I'm having at home. You don't understand you've got me in a creative role and I'm an ops guy, and, you know, you're coming down on me, then we're not necessarily looking at each other. We're looking at, hey, this was my purpose. This is what we agreed. I'm here. You know, I'm trying to reach this. We still have to reach the goal. But then the discussion becomes like, well, you know, you're right, Scott. I need to get you some support. It's not the right season for you right now. You're in an area for a while that you will not like. But as a leader, you can at least lay it out. Not, it's one-on-one, but it's not you and I. It's not arguing. It is what we agree we wanted to accomplish. Are we on track, off track? Is it in alignment with the standards, which gets a little more confrontational on occasion, because, you know, those are a little less flexible. Certainly the seasons kind of change what your role and the purpose is, because it may not be your time in the game to come in and really shine. So how does that sit with you when we go to the rod of correction?
The rod of correction, from the way of the shepherd.
Yeah.
What you were just demonstrating is so important. It's a thing that many people, and I know I struggle with it myself, so I know others are probably doing it and thinking, I don't do that. But the bottom line is, have you set the right expectation, right? Mm-hmm. Whether, and often we speak of it, right? We'll have a meeting, we'll have an all hands, and we'll talk the words. But very often do we actually document what we believe and what we've agreed to and what is going to be that standard that we're going to hold one another to, not just one side, but both sides. Hey, this is what we agreed to do. This was the strategy that we agreed that we were going to pursue. Here's where we are in accordance with the strategy. Not that things are set in stone, but at least you can now say, wait a minute, what was our baseline? What did we want to achieve to start with? And not very often do we actually do that documentation piece, because it takes time, right? But it's something that has saved us in the Rosewood family of companies many times. We've always said that if we have an interaction with a client, follow it up with an email.
Or it didn't occur.
Exactly
that's
right.
Or an employee, if it's a, you're helping train them, you're helping build them, performance discussion, even a kudos. If you didn't document it, it didn't occur.
But you now have that written record to say when you're in that extremis, to say, wait a minute, remember, this is what we agreed to. And it's kind of hard for that person to you know, basically say, that's not what I agreed to, or that's not what I expected. Wait a minute, here's the documentation that showed that. And not that it wants to be a CYA thing. We want clarity of communication is what we're looking for. And so having those expectations set, and more importantly, written, I think are important in any conversation. Because think about it from a performance review. You know, we wait an entire year, and generally what happens is a manager is going to put together the performance review, and it's really going off memory over the last couple of days, if not last couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. Well, what about the first 11 months of the year, right? If you set something in motion and you set that expectation for that year, at least you can bring that out and say, okay, this is what we agreed to. Oh, these three things, I didn't give you the proper guidance, or, oh, we canceled that project, or any of those sort of things, it gives you a chance to, you know, realign on what truly happened. There's, I know you're not a big agile person, but there's a big thing in agile about the daily stand-up. You know, what'd you accomplish?
We can clarify that. I am not a hater on agile. I am a, I have a disdain for misuse of agile. It's probably the better way.
And I agree.
We won't get into that.
I will agree.
It'll take a long time.
Yeah, a lot of times I think people want to be agile because they don't want to do anything. They don't want to plan anything. They don't want to make a decision. Right? Just being agile. I'm just
everything
being flexible,
is the least viable product because they didn't actually want to do the right product. That's a different discussion.
Right. But the, a good part about the agile framework, and I'm speaking specifically about Scrum, is the daily stand-up, where what did you accomplish yesterday? What are you going to accomplish today? What are the obstacles? And so it's that constant resetting, right? And for me, going back to that team I mentioned that I look forward to going into work every single day. One of the things that we did, we had a pretty big challenge in front of us. And as I remember back to that time, and it's been, you know, 2 decades, but what we did is we agreed on what our goals were. And then we started every single team meeting or every single staff meeting by reaffirming what we agreed to. That kept it, you know, front of mind. And so we knew what we were doing and why we were doing it. And everyone says, that's right, that's what we agreed to. It wasn't something we agreed to, and then 6 months later, we kind of got off our way. Every single meeting, we had that cadence saying, okay, this is our strategy. How are we doing against the strategy? Where are we sitting? Do we need to change? And we did that in real time. And that kept everyone aligned. And I was just thinking that, you know, if we did that more consistently with each of our crew members, how much cleaner would the communications be? How much easier would it be to have a conversation and saying, look, we're just not meeting that standard, right? Instead of waiting to something blows up, right? And now suddenly you want to put them on a performance improvement plan and the person's like, well, when did that happen? When did I stop being your favorite sheep, you know, to now a black sheep, right? When did that happen? Well, if you're having that daily conversation, or you're having that conversation with good documentation, they can see where they're starting to get a little way. And then the rod of correction gets them back on plan, because then you also need the staff of guidance. You got to guide them back to the path.
Yeah, I think there's, you know, before someone runs 100% down that road, I'll do what I'll do to Scott often and say, well, you've got the other side of the
coin. It depends.
Well, it doesn't depend. It is 100% accurate. It is more, like you said, a proximity and time and how specific you get in the questions. Yeah. And so talking with a very senior leader of special forces for the Army for a long time, they called it negative permission.
Mm.
And so they're very clear on the values. They certainly are very clear on their creed. They have a mission, and the negative permission is you don't do anything to violate those standards, but you need to accomplish this task. And what I see a lot is when we get a lot of specific documentation, that in itself then becomes a crutch, because the inevitable next discussion is, hey, Scott, you really didn't hit this target we were going on.
Yeah,
and your response
right.
is, you didn't write down what I needed to do when this occurred. And in business, it is I would argue, and certainly it's part of one of the main theses of the whole cohort of HelmWise, which you run. There is such a drive for the right answer, and I'm going to document everything, and I'm going to lay out everything possible. And if you just take 3 minutes like we do with our non-hourglass, that's impossible. The whole environment changes way too quickly. The idea that you're going to document every potential move, it's much more important to lay out really, like you're saying, here are the standards, here's the SOP, here's what we're going to deliver, here's our values, here's as much guidance, and I think you clearly say this is guidance, not the specifics of what we expect. Anything in the unknown that pops up, as long as you pursue it in alignment with our values and towards what we've agreed upon, it may not be my decision, I can't make every decision, Scott. You must make decisions. You must move us forward, even if it's wrong. If it was done in the correct intent, under the standards, we're going to go with it, and it's better to move than to to sit back, and it's much better to move. Probably second best to sit back, and the worst is the third, to sit back and just say, well, you didn't tell me. I mean, I would much rather you move, make a mistake, and kind of take that negative permission of what would get me in trouble. I need to move forward, and I need to solve this. And so that's a long answer, but
actually a great
pendulum discussion.
Phenomenal point, right? Because there are many who could have listened to that segment or watched that segment, depending on how they're viewing this podcast.
Written it down.
Saying, you're right, I'm going to get everything written down to, you know, so it's perfect, right? And if you deviate from that, then you're off course and we're going to have a difficult conversation, perhaps. That's not what I mean. What I'm saying
is... No, you would have to be a 100% perfect navigator if that's the course you're plotting for the team. You better hope you dial in every eventuality, and it's just not possible. So that's why I say take the 3 minutes.
Look at the effort it would take to do it and to maintain it. You'd be spending more time, you know, checking the checklist than you would be actually performing the work. And so that's a challenge. So you mentioned the special forces individual, and that reminds something goes back to Marine Corps training, which is what they call commander's intent, which is this is the overall objective that we're trying to accomplish. So in absence of very specific orders, you can then use your judgment to say, okay, what should I do right now in order to accomplish that commander's intent?
And you know the standard of being a Marine.
And exactly right. And you still have your standards, right? You got to live within, you know, the laws of warfare and the rules of engagement and all of those other things. But you do have some gray area. But you also understand where you're ultimately going. And I think that's where I really want to get to is, you know, does the person know where we're going? And do we know what we expect of them? And do we give them enough room, latitude, to use their judgment, to use their experience, to accomplish that particular goal? And so we would say, we want to tell them the what, not the how. Because if we get into the how, then we're getting to micromanagement. That's when I've got a 47 list of things, and, oh, you didn't do number 20, right? Mm-hmm. So therefore, hey, you're probably not going to get your bonus this time because you missed one of the 27 items. That's not what I mean at all. But I do mean that there should be some document that both of you cannot deny that you've agreed to as what we want to be accomplished, the overall goal.
And I think this is where I can kind of circle it back to the discussion on justice and mercy. So the document should be clear enough where everyone stood the standard. Caring, which is where we started, should dictate if you know your flock and you're taking time to be out there that, hey, you know, that's the standard, but Scott might need a little more help during this period because this is not, he's in a different season. He's in a different seat.
Right.
And as long as he has the values and there is a ROI, because it is still business, we're not here to run a charity organization. You know, you must be wise enough to say, you know what, I'm going to take the time to care for that individual until we need them in the third, fourth quarter, later in the year, later in 2 years, or they earn, you know, we get enough volume revenue to hire someone to move them back out of this seat. There's a lot of scenarios to play out, but I think caring dictates how you dive a little more deep, give a little more mercy, show a little more personal care for the folks. If you don't know them, you don't really love the people that work for you and don't appreciate your values, they become a metric. And I think that's where you see a lot of the certainly over the last few years as it's come more and more to light, the culling of the bottom 10%. We run metrics that, you know, it's the irony of Silicon Valley, which we had that debate a little while back, is it's coffee, it's this and that. Yeah, but you better put out this many lines of code. You better put out this much. And when you don't, we'll see you because you're at the bottom. So what seemed like a painted up pretty picture, when it becomes metric driven, which we can close on this because this is when you and I talk about, is, you know, you see most sports teams with a version of a Rudy, even in high school, you see it in colleges, you see it often, even in the pros, the one that everybody wants. You actually brought the book of, was it Ryan Friel, I believe, you know, went to a lot of teams, became loved in the clubhouse, was really the leader of the clubhouse. Correct. Obviously was a very good athlete, played major leagues a long time, but was not a superstar, but he's not collecting his card. They become captains on the team, and there is really sometimes no area where they are amazing. And so what do you do with those people in business and morale building, culture building?
Yeah, I was just thinking about that. I was thinking about, can you turn it into a science, right? And you're going to say, well, this person meets all of the parameters. They have the right degrees. They have the right level of experience. They have the right certifications. They're the right age. They're the right, whatever. But then you're not taking in the human element, which is their personality, their drive, their passions, their motivations, those sort of things. And so in your reference to a sports team, that individual may not be the best player from a physical or a skill perspective, but what they bring, the intangibles, the psychological influence, which we all know the brain is more powerful than the muscle. How do you account for that? Well, that comes down to leadership. And it comes down to leadership of understanding what is the makeup of your crew, right? How many Rudys do I need versus how many people who are just excellent at doing task A or task B? And, it also reminded me of going back to The Way of the Shepherd. There was a section in the book, they were talking about how important or the responsibility of the shepherd themselves. And it was something to the effect of, who's going to pay for the price of your leadership? Is it going to be you, or is it going to be your crew or your sheep in this particular discussion, right? You have a responsibility to ensure that you are developing your leadership skills so that then you can properly guide and correct your crew when necessary. Because if you don't, and you're not being that good leader, you're not trying to get to know them, you're not trying to put them in the right position for success, then they're going to pay for that lack of leadership through the frustration, through the dysfunction in the organization, through the drama that's going to happen, the conflict, all of those sort of things. So who's going to pay that price for the leadership, you or them? And then the part you mentioned as well about, all right, you've got the Rudy, but do we know their fit? And can that Rudy develop into something more? Because you don't just say, hey, he's a great Rudy, he's a great culture person, and this person's a great tactical person. You got to say, well, man, I still have this responsibility as a leader to grow that individual, grow their skill sets. Maybe the other one needs some more people skills, the EI side of it, the emotional intelligence side. This person needs a little bit more of the hard core skills, doing this task or that, learning Microsoft Excel or whatever, right? But we still owe it to both of them to understand how do we develop them so they can be more effective for the team and for themselves.
Yeah, I wrote down a note and then corrected it myself. So first, when you were talking about the individual within a business, I put there, they are the standard of the values and the caring.
Yeah.
And then I kind of scratched through that, and I'll tell you why. Is maybe they are the champion of the standard of values and caring. And again, while I say that is, and we can potentially close it on the spirit of excellence that we have across our companies. Are they able to be excellent? Are they an all-star in actual performance? Maybe not, but they are an all-star in the way we define success and try to here is doing the best you can with your abilities and your situation. And so they are setting the standard of the values, even if it's not the standard we find necessarily acceptable to the client and winning the actual next 5 yards in a football game.
Mm-hmm.
And so you must understand that that is just as powerful in your kind of yin and yang world of
the
technical get it done side. But, we've seen it here, and we've seen it with often with engineers, people who are very math driven coders, is they build all, you couldn't take a book and come up with more metrics, more reward systems, more tracking, more KPIs to drive people to do the technical aspect. And then I have to quickly remind them, if the people don't want to do it, you can build as many reports as you possibly could come up with. And I think you've seen this as we've seen governments and societies and businesses try to engineer people. And people, again, like you said, are still people. Someone must make them want to do even the best laid out plan in the world. If they don't have the desire and don't feel the love and the caring and someone living out the values, I haven't seen it work. It'll work a little while if you ride the heck out of them, and if you're the boss that stays on them, and certainly there's been some big organizations do it, but not in a Helmwise way, I would argue.
Well, it's interesting what you just mentioned kind of goes back and wraps up most of what we talked about. We go back to caring about your member of your crew. How you get to know that? Well, as I mentioned with the relationship economy book, you know, Ford, family, occupation, recreation, dreams, right? Through that conversation, you're going to figure out whether or not they actually want to do what you need them to do. If you don't have that conversation, if you don't care about them, then you're going to try to metric the world out of them, and that's going to be very, very difficult, instead of trying to do a little bit of both. Again, it's the yin or the yang. I can't say it should be all about the caring and no metrics, but it should be that right balance, and that balance is going to be different from person to person. Someone's going to need more metrics to drive them. Some people are going to need more words of affirmation going for the five love languages, right? You know, some people are going to need more on the personal side. Some people need more on the metric side, depending on whether they're, you know, kind of task-oriented or people-oriented.
And I think that it really, we brought it up briefly, but that meeting in the middle also is, a lot of times they don't understand how their dreams and desires and skills actually tie to the business.
Go.
And so that's the leader's job too, is not only put this paper out between you and I, but show how your world, where you're coming from, whatever that background is, you know, you've come from, and mine, and what we want for the business, this is how what you want actually builds towards it. And I think that's another thing that's really, I liked your, that goes back to your walk slowly.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't take the time to, even if you go out and you do the quick surveys and you're, hey, buddy, and you're doing the superficial high five, you know, everybody's had the friends they know that way, and it's buddies with everybody and friends really with no one. If you don't actually take the time to say, Scott, no. If you want to live out your personal values and your why, here's how it ties together. Here's how we're able to grow it within the organization and how that is a good business decision that helps your career. And I think that is just an area that takes time. And I think that, you know, you do have to care.
Roger that. You said you're going to close it on our spirit of excellence value. What do you want to mention about spirit of excellence?
Oh, I think I already brought it up. I think that, you know, it's one, and I'll give an example. Actually, yesterday morning with my daughter, and she's just doing, you know, soccer, and actually one of our Rosewood executives is giving her some lessons, and she was resistant to that. And I think my wife pointed it out best, is when I was telling her that she needed to be the best she can be, she interpreted that as she needed to be the best soccer player.
Right. Right.
And I said, no. And so it was very astute, and it was a good discussion, even with an 11-year-old, of no, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that you do the best you can, and we think that's success, and understand that you're not going to be able to do the best you can every day. You're going to be tired. You're going to have, you know, allergies. There's things that are going to occur. We don't do the best we can every day. That's still a pipe dream. If your boss tells you that, that's not true. But, you know, do the best you can do, and I don't care what you do. And that is success. If you decide to, you know, go on to college and do things that are more, I guess, society considers important, just do it the best you can. If you do things that, you know, draw your passion, and you go out and volunteer and be the best at that, that's really all that matters. And so when we talk about spirit of excellence, I think it is important to not set the standard to the Rudy on the team that you're not fulfilling our spirit of excellence, unless you're the best player. And I'm like, no. That's when you're doing the best you can do in alignment with our values, you are succeeding. And it's up to us as leaders to foster that, build you up, and get you in the right seat.
Yeah, I've always thought about our spirit of excellence values, doing the best I can with what I have.
Yep.
So if you're in that store back in the days of ProVantage, you know, what are the assets that I have there?
Mm-hmm.
So it's my best effort, but it's also, how can I get the assets of my team to give their best effort as well? And so that kind of goes with the spirit of excellence.
Very good.
So great conversation today, Chandler. I appreciate it. Thank you all for joining the Powerhouse Perspective. Hopefully you'll come back and listen to future podcasts. In the meantime, cheers.